Welcome to Creative Conversations. I'm Roger Humphrey. In this episode, I'm pleased to welcome movie critic and podcaster Landon DeFever. Please join us as we talk about all things related to the movies. Before we begin, please take a moment and hit the subscribe and like buttons. It's an easy thing to do, and it really helps the channel a lot. Thanks. And we are here with Landon DeFever. Welcome to the show, Landon.
Hey, Roger, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's good to see you again. As a little truth in advertising, when Landon was much younger, he was a guitar student of mine. Apparently, you've recovered nicely. So, and so you now have a podcast.
I do, yes. I started the podcast in 2021. It was in the midst of COVID, and it was me wanting to pursue some sort of creative endeavor to keep my mind fresh and still like work on my professional skills, interview skills, researching skills, all that good stuff. And so much of it was rooted in just wanting to keep busy. And I contacted my friend Eric, who I've known since college, Eric Spitz. And we first met each other in an intro to professional and technical writing course in college together, which was my major, his minor. So we just immediately hit it off. We've always been really big film fans, and we decided to create a podcast that explores that exactly. It's called Films for the Void. You can stream it wherever you get podcasts, Apple Music, Spotify, Deezer, Google Podcasts, all that good stuff. And essentially the podcast has taken really big shape, like different shapes over the past 4 years that we've been doing it since then. And initially it was a podcast where we would talk about like a slew of new releases that had come out over the last 2 weeks, as well as pick a main topic movie that we would go back and forth picking. So on the first episode, I let Eric have the first one, and then we would just have a longer conversation around that. And then the week after, the episode after that, I would take the reins, and then I would pick a movie that I want to talk about. And we've changed the format a few different times over the past few years. But now the way we do it is we do a double feature where that main topic movie is still in play, but we also do an intro movie that we talk about for maybe 15 to 20 minutes that directly relates to it or loosely relates to it. Could be another director's work. Could be a film that's very similar to it. And we try to pick something a little bit different every time too. It's always going to be something that we feel really connected with or we're interested in. And it's something that we've been really enjoying doing, and we've been able to explore a lot over the past few years. So it's been a lot of fun to get to do that.
I know that I listened to an episode in preparation for this because they
did
research, you know, and you did both Mamma Mia movies.
I'm glad you listened to that one. That's one of the stronger ones we've done recently.
Oh, is it really?
It was, yeah. The Mamma Mia movies have always been movies that have eluded me in some capacity. I say in the episode that I was actually in line to go see it with my friend Courtney in middle school. And unfortunately, the movie was sold out, and I just never got around to watching it. And specifically with this season of the show, we've been trying to pick movies that neither of us have ever seen before. So they're all completely blind watches. They're all movies that Eric has never seen before, I have never seen before, and taking that opportunity to sort of explore new mediums and genres that we've never been able to tackle before. And the Mamma Mia episode was a weird one because I've seen funny reviews of Mamma Mia, the original, for sure. And it never seemed like my thing, but I always was curious if it was something that was eluding me in some capacity. Maybe it's something that that maybe looks a little worse than I'm actually giving it credit for or something. Maybe it could be something a little bit different. And it honestly gave me the experience that I was expecting, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, I think movies have the capacity to give people entertainment in many different varieties. It can be something that you really connect with and enjoy analyzing, or it can be something that you find really funny or just not very compelling. And Either way, I think there's a lot of joy in being able to analyze film in that regard, whether it's something you really connect with, don't connect with, or just think is really bad in a funny way, which is something we do a lot on this podcast. It's something that we really hold tight to our chest and really enjoy.
Now, when you view these movies, I mean, the Mamma Mia movie, that's not in a theater. That's got to be downloaded or viewed online somehow. Is that correct?
It is, yes. So the way we do it is that we try to pick movies that are on some sort of a accessible streaming service, whether that's Netflix, Hulu, Prime Video. Tubi is a great one too, because though it's ad supported, it's something that they have a wide variety of films that you can pick from, whether it's like art house films or old kung fu movies we've done before. I'm trying to think what other stuff, but it's or very low budget things that don't have an audience outside of it. It's basically a catch-all for all the streaming services that don't have access. But yeah, a lot of it is just sort of finding an accessible means of watching it and then being able to share that with people. And that is usually what we do. And sometimes we've been able to tie in movies to what we've been talking, like, excuse me, we've like the new Yorgos Lanthimos movie, Kinds of Kindness, that came out last month. Eric picked Dogtooth, which is that director's first film that came out in 2009. So we decided to pair it with his brand new movie, which is out in theaters now. So it kind of depends on what the format of the episode is going to be and what it directly relates to. But we try to find movies that are a little bit more accessible.
So how have you always been interested in films?
Yeah, I always have. It's funny. My mom actually wrote in my baby book when I was 7 years old that when I was a kid, I was really fascinated with looking through the Dish Network TV guide of all of the movies that were streaming on pay-per-view. And I would write down all the names of the movies and the star ratings. And I found that really interesting for some reason. And I've always just kind of latched onto it. I've been reading film reviews, like professional film reviews, since I was 9 years old. I really took to film critics like Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel on Siskel and Ebert. I worship what they've done and what they were able to do with their program. And then eventually Richard Roper after Siskel passed away. And ever since then, I've also found a lot of solace in hearing the combined efforts of film criticism from all places all over. Some of my favorite film critics are Alonzo Duralde and Dave White. They are husband film critics who live in Los Angeles that discuss new releases every week on a podcast called Linoleum Knife. And I genuinely love their perspective. And a lot of what they were able to provide helped shape what Films for the Void would become. And there really is like no shortage of great opinions on film on the internet. I just wanted to be one of those voices and sort of contribute to what people have been doing. And so much of that also has been active on Twitter as well. Like literally anybody with an internet access and a love for film now can put themselves out there and express their opinions. And I just wanted to add to that conversation. I felt like I had a unique perspective on filmmaking and what I enjoyed and what I saw looking for films. And I wanted to provide that to the public.
So you think of yourself as a critic. You and Eric are critics. Mm-hmm. So Siskel and Ebert redone. So
yeah, okay. Absolutely.
That's okay. I mean, that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Definitely.
So how does, do you confine yourself to movies that are primarily a theatrical kind of thing? Or do you get into like some of the bigger projects, Game of Thrones would be like a huge project, but it's the production, the production values, everything that you would expect to see in a movie. Do you get into that kind of stuff also? Or?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. As far as like Films for the Void goes, like we've covered everything from silent films in the 1920s to brand new releases to to comedies, drama, horror films, animated films. We've done entire, we're working on entire filmographies of directors as well. There's a director named Satoshi Kon, who unfortunately passed away in 2010. He is a Japanese animation director whose work I really enjoy. He directed films that I recommend people start with: Perfect Blue and Tokyo Godfathers. Those are my two favorites of his. Perfect Blue in particular was a huge inspiration on the director Darren Aronofsky, who would go on to direct Black Swan, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. And yeah, so it really just kind of runs the gambit from like old to new. And I try to, a lot of my free time is spent like looking for like little niche pockets of filmmakers or films that people don't necessarily, like that I want to make sure aren't lost to time too. Because I feel like if you're a college student, for example, and you like just, and you're interested in film and you're like, hey, I want to like set out on my own and I want to start looking at things, I obviously would recommend you start with like the big ones, obviously your Spielbergs, your Scorsese's, your Linklaters, but then you get into like the really smaller pockets as well. Like one of the biggest things that I can recommend people do is if there is an era of film in particular, let's take 1999, for example, like a historically tremendous year in film. I would recommend going to the Wikipedia page, 1999 in film, go through that list and compare it to, and then look at the scores for each of those movies, whether it's on, whether it's critics at the time, like Ebert, like Ebert, for example, was alive like well into 1999 and reviewed quite literally everything. And if you want a like obviously you don't have to agree with everything one critic says. I think that would be kind of defeat the purpose of having multiple opinions. But at the same time, though, I think you looking at the time reviews as well as retrospective reviews, because 1999 is 25 years from now. So you can kind of get a feel for what has been re-released, what has been what hasn't been lost to time. Those are your big hitters that I think people should absolutely check out because they've stood the test of time and developed a fan base. But there are also like many films that aren't necessarily like as big as like your Sixth Senses, your Green Miles. That are like well, really well regarded, but then you also have films like The Straight Story and The Iron Giant and film and The Blair Witch Project, films that like really operated on a very small indie scale that I feel like necessarily like they have their cult fan bases, but I feel like at the same time though, they're as well regarded, but they weren't nearly as popular at the time. So it's something that I feel really strongly about and recommending people really look at like the finer details of every year of filmmaking, especially if it's an era that you find really fascinating.
I've noticed that obviously the style of filmmaking has changed.
Absolutely.
The style of acting, the style of directing, and not counting the, special effects stuff. If we just kind of set that aside in a separate category, but just take a look at some of the movies. I mean, for me as a kid, I grew up in the 50s and 60s. I was a little boy in the 50s, and mm-hmm. And so they used to show a lot of these old movies from the 30s and the 40s on television.
Oh yeah,
you know, and so. So I look at those and with a certain amount of nostalgia, you know, it takes me back to my childhood, you know, these old black and whites and such. And,
oh, yeah.
And Maltese Falcon, of course, would be an obvious choice, but there were others as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the Big Sleep, the original one.
Oh, yeah.
The thing that really strikes me is the dialogue, how concise it was.
Oh yeah.
Compared to today, you know, mm-hmm. and the love scenes / sex scenes, mm-hmm. which back in there, it was just a raised eyebrow and they fade to black, you know?
And, yeah.
And now we get a full 15 minute demonstration, you know?
right. It depends on the movie you're watching, but I totally get that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so anyway, it's, but also the length of the movies, they could tell a story in an hour and a half,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so you go to the theater, you know, a small bag of popcorn to do you. Now you got to have that big bucket.
Yeah, you don't want to miss like big chunks of the movie because you were in line like refilling your 55-ounce bag of popcorn that you bought. Yeah,
a tub of grease.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. I definitely feel that with films from the 40s and 50s and what I've gone back to, like with older eras like that, like the 40s and 50s, those are eras that I definitely hold in higher regard because I don't watch as much from those eras. But when I do, I always seek out the ones that have like that are more highly regarded as well. Like Nicholas Ray is a filmmaker who I've really been able to get into. Forget the names of his films. I recently watched In a Lonely Place, which he directed with Humphrey Bogart, and I absolutely adored that film. I was just so impressed with the actual like staging and how much that was like a real big turning point for how films were shot in that era, because instead of just filming it very statically like a stage play, you're able to really like get in and zoom in. I feel like Nicholas Ray is a director that was very much in the wake of someone like Orson Welles, who took very big risks in being able to capture how he wanted to have his film portrayed in the long run. And yeah, Nicholas Ray was definitely a director that that's just the first one that came to mind. There's obviously many more, but Nicholas Ray was one that really came to mind. And every film that I've watched from him has absolutely blown me away. So that's one thing I would recommend. If you're interested in that era, that's a filmmaker I'd highly recommend people check out.
There were so many of those really wonderful, wonderful directors that could make a lot out of a little.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
And today they you know, it's today's movies are different. I don't want to say worse or better. I really don't think that's a fair assessment. But there's all new technologies, and it is a brand new playground for some of the guys, you know. And
absolutely.
And the business has changed too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they have to do these summer blockbusters. I mean, ever since Jaws, you know.
Yeah, so. And you also see the rise of what were once indie studios, like finding big successes in art house communities. It's really cool to see a studio like A24, who was sort of working on a minor scale in the early 2010s, and now they have two Best Picture winners under their belt with Moonlight and Everything Everywhere All at Once, which are both fantastic movies. And I love that it's not all owned under a monopoly as much anymore. It's not all under one big umbrella of six corporations. There are a lot of indie studios. Neon is another example, who produced distributed Parasite, which won Best Picture in 2019. So it's incredible to see what indie studio resources are able to tackle and bring into as well to the table. And it's just not Big Brother anymore. There's a bunch of opportunities for smaller filmmakers and experimental film styles to reach out to a larger audience too.
One of the things that I've noticed is in my world of music,
sure,
you know, it's anybody can release music now, mm-hmm. right? You know, so the good news is anybody can release their music, but the bad news is everybody's releasing their music.
Yeah. the market is,
you know, yeah. I've noticed, I'll sit here some evenings just bored with what's on television in general. And so I'll go floating around and see what I can find. And I'll see, well, this movie looks interesting, and I'll watch it, and it's really awful. there's stuff in there, you know, directed by Larry.
that's the downside with when you... I think that's the downside with streaming services too. I feel like when you get too big and you have like an unlimited bucket of wealth to be able to just fund whatever project you want and try to like hit as many demographics as you can, you start to lose the voice that's coming through. And Netflix, I feel like, is especially guilty of this. I feel like most Netflix originals, when it comes to TV shows and movies, not all of them. Obviously, you do have some that break through. They always have at least like one or two big Oscar contenders at the end of the year. Your Marriage Story, your Romas, your Irishmans, things along that line. But so much of it is also just meant to act as a means of, I'm exhausted from my long day at work, like doing what I normally do to pay my bills. I just want to lay down and watch something stupid. And unfortunately, a majority of what that is going to be something that people don't necessarily want to engage with the artistic integrity with. Don't get me wrong, there are plenty of things that streaming services put out, but it's definitely not the majority. And I definitely feel that sentiment for sure. It's a shame. But unfortunately, it does allow for those like little hidden gems that you find along the way all that more exciting. And that's what makes the hunt of watching films as a hobby so endearing and exciting. It makes you feel like you're like panning for gold in San Francisco in the 1800s, and oh, I found gold. It's like a new form of media or art or artistic expression that you get to latch onto and recommend to people. And it's a very cool, exciting thing. And it's something I'm happy I've dedicated a good chunk of my life to.
Well, I have friends in the business, and talking to them about some of this stuff, and some of it just seems to be, if they can put two nickels together, they'll put together the film, and then once it's done, Then Netflix, amongst others, Hulu and such, they're content driven, of course. And so, they're always looking for new stuff. And a lot of times, if it's already made, bring it.
They'll just buy it right out. Yep, exactly. It's funny you mentioned you have friends in the industry because one of the things I remember from taking guitar lessons with you was you had a little poster hung up of your friend who was in George of the Jungle 2, which
Yeah.
I that's something I distinctly remember going over to your house and taking guitar lessons, which is pretty cool to think about. Oh,
Christopher Showerman.
that's who that is. Okay.
Yeah, his name is Christopher Showerman. He was actually on the podcast
Oh,
a
cool.
few months ago. And so he's still busy. And then another guy who's not in the movies, he would be if he could be. His name is Jim Hoffmeister, and he played the role of Kermit in the TV show Shameless.
Oh, okay.
Set at the bar and did
Gotcha,
that.
gotcha.
And he's a sweetheart of a guy. And
Oh, that's
so
cool.
and they just actually did another friend of mine just did her name is Jane Rosemont, and that's not a name that I would expect you to know. Jane is an independent a filmmaker, and she does primarily documentaries.
Oh, cool.
Jane,
Give me the name. Can you give me the name one more time? I'm curious.
yes, Jane Rosemont, Rosemont,
Okay.
she did a thing with Jim. It was actually a biography of Jim, and it's called Acting Like Nothing Is Wrong, because
Okay.
Jim's backstory is in many ways horrendous. And as a child, his mother just basically his never knew his father. His mother basically abandoned him. He was in the system,
Oh.
all that kind of stuff. Aged out of the system and ended up, and he was physically abused and mentally abused,
Oh.
and all of this. I mean, it's terrible, terrible story. And at the same time, and it's a feature length documentary, by the way.
Okay.
And it hasn't been released yet, but they've hit the circuit doing the film festivals, and they've won in Paris and in Canada and all over the United States. And it's just like, but it's a joyous film. At the very end of it, you walk out feeling, wow, if he could pull out of this,
Yeah.
anybody, it's just there's something happy about the film. And you would think, with an introduction like that, you'd go, do I really want to watch?
Sure.
And
And that's what, yeah, I was gonna say, like documentaries that like tell like really heart-wrenching stories like that, and then to see like the light at the end of the tunnel at the end of it is, I don't know, it's something I really appreciate about documentaries too. One of my favorite documentaries is a film called Dear Zachary. It's sort of like an autobiographical, well, it's a biographical film about, it's like a true crime film. The director's friend was murdered, and it tells the story of how he was murdered, and then finds out that the woman who they assume did it was pregnant with his child. And then it kind of goes on and tells his story because he wants to craft a documentary to show to that child when he's born and old enough to know who his father was. And it's a heart-wrenching film, but the film ends like it ends very it's very bittersweet, but at the same time though it's very passionate and well documented, and it's one of those films that makes really reminds you of the power of filmmaking and how you're able to tie stories together even when the subject that it's about is no longer here anymore.
Those are marvelous. There's there
Yeah.
was a, another movie I'm acquainted with the filmmakers. It's a husband and wife, and they did all of the work over a period of 3 years. They did all of the video work. He wrote the music. She narrated. I mean, just everything.
Yeah.
And it's called The Ice Bridge.
Okay.
And it's and they've shown it, and there's a little backstory there too. But it's the basic storyline is that it's a documentary, true thing, and they're showing what Mackinac Island is like in the wintertime. And
Oh, wow. Okay.
the ice bridge is when Lake Huron freezes over, and they take snowmobiles back and forth between the island and the mainland.
Oh,
It's,
okay.
and that's referred to as an ice bridge. The people who live up there, that's what they do. So they don't always get one every year, but the photography in this thing, videography, is just absolutely jaw-dropping. They did it
Yeah.
with, a single camera and a iMac or a yeah, a Macintosh laptop
Yeah.
and went to work. And it's so I was talking to the woman who was, I forget her name right now. That's gonna bother me. But anyway,
Yeah.
she was the station manager at WKAR TV and radio, and we were talking about projects and things that you could do on a budget. And I was telling her about this. She thought it was cool. So I brought her my copy of it, and she had it for about a month or so, and came back and said that she'd been in contact with the filmmakers, and it was going to become a bonus if you sent them X number of dollars, during their
Oh, like a
project. And
Kickstarter, yeah.
yeah, right. And so they were giving away copies of that for people, and then plus selling them copies of this. And
Wow.
there are I don't know about the entire thing, but there are scenes from it on YouTube called the Ice
Okay.
Bridge, so you can go and watch it. But it's stunning what a couple of people with a certain amount of dedication and a small amount of equipment can do. It's you, filmmakers with a real sense of purpose and a real vision can do some amazing things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for recommending that. That's something that I would be very interested in checking out at some point. Some of my favorite documentaries are ones that aren't even like about something or trying to solve a problem or trying to raise awareness of something. It's just like contemplative nature documentaries. Like they're some of
Right.
my absolute favorites that I love to just sort of like it's not even it's more of a different perspective that you're able to enjoy at, like in a completely different part of the world that you're not connected to. And I think by that definition, you're able to connect and report on it in a way. So yeah, that sounds fascinating. As someone that tries to go up to Mackinac Island every single summer, and I'm going this summer with my mom as well, who was just on your podcast as well. And yeah, that would be very interesting to learn because as someone that hasn't gone over the bridge, I think I've maybe gone over the bridge during winter at once. It would be very interesting to see, especially with great cinematography. It would be very cool to explore that.
Yeah, you would definitely like it. Yeah, well, my wife owned a art gallery up there for 14 years. Was
Yeah.
part owner, and I was up there. I didn't live up there as such, but I spent a great deal of time up there, and I worked up there quite a bit on the weekends and such as a
Okay.
musician. And so I have a real soft spot in my heart and probably my head
Right. Don't we all?
for the island. I just love it, but it's such a unique place. And this film, usually when people talk about Mackinac Island there, because it's a tourist destination, summer tourist destination, that's what they talk about. And the place pretty much closes up,
Oh, yeah.
right before Halloween. And so that's kind of where this one picks up. Like that's the story is the story of that island and the people that live there, in the winter months when,
Yeah.
because it, I think they only have like about 500 people that live there year round.
I know, which is wild to think about. Yeah. As I imagine, like they have their own sort of internal economy, and I imagine like distribution of like supply, like a food chain supply might be difficult at times too. Like, yeah, that I was gonna say that could be a documentary in and of itself.
Yeah, and that's what they do. So it's pretty wild, but the ice bridge is pretty nifty. So yeah,
Yeah,
I
definitely.
think you're gonna like it. So do you have a favorite genre, or are you just kind of a generalist?
A little bit of everything. As I've gotten older, I've definitely gotten to appreciate more drama than anything else. When I was a kid, I loved comedy and animated films, and I still do in a lot of ways, but I feel like I'm more surprised by when I find a really good drama than if I find some, like a I'm more often surprised by really good dramas than I do find really good comedies. So I would say more of a dramatic perspective, a lot of art house stuff for sure. I do enjoy horror movies when it hits me just right. I'm very picky about horror because I'm not really that scared by movies necessarily, because I've seen so many of them at this point. Any film that I think taps into something new that I haven't seen said in a particular way is what sticks with me the most, whether it's a visual presentation, a captivating story, really great effects. Something that I haven't seen before is what usually sticks with me and what I tend to recommend. So anything that sort of hits that threshold is usually what I go into, regardless of whether it's meant to make you laugh or cry or scare you. If it succeeds in its general emotion that it's attempting, that's what I really gravitate towards.
So the podcast is Films for the Void.
It is.
And I will go ahead and put a link to that in the description. So that folks can find you and listen to you and Eric and talk about stuff. In the meantime, I'm going to say goodbye. We are totally out of time. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Roger. Yeah, it's a pleasure to get to reconnect with you. And yeah, thank you for thinking of me.
This was a lot of fun. Thanks.
Yeah.
See ya. Bye.
See ya.
It was great seeing Landon again. Like most people, I don't know much about movies other than I know what I like. So I really enjoyed looking at them through his eyes. Before you go, if you or anyone you know plays guitar or ukulele, you should stop by www.rogerhumphrey.com and check out the video tips or the free stuff on the resources tab. Thanks again for taking the time to listen, and I hope you come back and listen to more episodes of Creative Conversations with Roger Humphrey.